Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there.
There we go.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Basia. How are you? Is that how I say your name? But
hi. So my name is Barbara. You can call me Basia. Like Basha.
Say it again. Sorry.
Like it, the way you would pronounce it, like you would Basha.
Like Basha?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay, cool. How's your day going?
My day is going great. It's finally raining. We've had I'm like rejoicing because my prayers for rain have been answered. We really are in the middle of like terrible drought. I think for Boston, it's like a historic, like record drought for month of June and July. So my garden is like dying, but you know, it's fine, but it's just that we have water bans and it's tough because you can't use soaker hoses, but I mean, who really, you know, nobody's going to see it, but it's just, it's like we have restrictions for water and there isn't any natural rain. So then I'm like running back and forth with hoses trying to water everything. And the sun is like 95 degrees every day. So it's just, everything is wilting. And then it's fine, but it's, you know, like the tomatoes are splitting, for example, because the heat is so extreme that, but other than that, so it's raining, so I'm very happy.
All right. Crazy. I had no idea. I knew it was super hot in New York this week, but I didn't realize that Boston was experiencing a drought.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess compared to, for example, California, we can't talk about drought really. But we're getting a lot less rain than average than we would normally. Everybody's lawn is dead, basically, you know, like when you drive through the suburb. I live in the suburb, so I live just south of Boston. Everybody's lawn is yellow. And you can see, if you look up at the trees, you know, the trees are showing heat stress and, you know, like some trees started dropping leaves. And so it's tough. I mean, but we're supposed to be getting 3 inches today, like literally a downpour. So I'm sitting next to my window, like hoping, like, come on, because we need it.
Crazy.
How are you doing? So you're getting an interview today?
Oh my goodness. I am having like the crazy day. Yeah. And then I have a job interview and then hopefully, fingers crossed. Do you know who Elizabeth Kucinich is? I'm going to interview her today too.
No.
She is on the board of Rodale's and she's like an executive producer. She produces movies. And have you heard of that movie GMO OMG?
Oh, yeah.
She was the producer on that movie, and she also made a movie called Hot Cities, which it sounds like Boston is a hot city. and she's just very active in the environmental space, the social justice space. Her husband, Dennis Kucinich, ran for president a few years ago, back when, like, he ran a few times, like when Obama was running and before that. And that's how I heard about her. And then I've just kind of followed her career. And she just really works hard for protecting our environment and for social justice. So I'm hoping, I tried to get her on before
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah. And then something happened and she had to reschedule. And then today I was like, because I'm about to, I just posted episode 149. So she, I was like, could you be my episode 150? And she said, yes.
Oh my gosh.
And then we scheduled it for today. And then the principal called me and was like, can you do an interview at the exact same time?
Oh, no.
And then, so then like, we've been like emailing back and forth between me and the two of them.
Yeah.
All night long. It's been crazy. And then, So you know,
it's really such an honor that, you know, you invited me to talk, you know, after or right before. Such an important, and all of your guests are really such amazing and important people. And I feel like I'm just here just digging holes in the ground, you know.
So. No, everybody who grows a garden and you know, uses earth-friendly techniques and tries to go organic and just, you know, not put those chemicals and pesticides on our planet and trying to, like, is a earth saver. So you're just one of our, you know, futuristic, you know, forward-thinking, you know, visionaries and green future protectors. You know, you're working for a green future, and just, I know you're gonna I love your pictures on Facebook of your beautiful flowers and your garden and stuff. So do you, like, now do you have a nursery, or like, where, like, do you have a gardening business, or
no? So I'm a biology student at UMass Boston. And no, I do not have a business. I just basically have it's almost like a victory garden, you know, like if you imagine the dimension and the space, because it's just 25 by 75 feet. And I just cover the entire space with flowers and vegetables. So no, I do not have a business, but because it's just too small and I'm too busy, and my boyfriend works at a hospital. So we can't put enough time into the garden to actually, you know, be able to sell any of it, but I just grow it for fun, you know, and we have a lot of vegetables that we consume, and we give to neighbors and friends and family. But no, we don't have a business, and we don't make profit off of it. We just do it, you know. I just do it because I love it. So,
aw, that's beautiful. I love that. All right, so before we go a little further, do you want to tell us about your very first gardening experience? Like, how old were you? Were you a kid? Were you an adult? Like, who were you with? What did you grow? Like, what can you remember your first experience?
Well, so actually my first, like the real actually being responsible for a garden is just maybe 3 years ago when we bought this house. And, you know, we have very nice flat land, and the soil is beautiful. So the previous owner had a beautiful garden, and then he, you know, as he was getting older, he wasn't able to keep up with it anymore. So it just sort of went back to nature, quote unquote. So it was covered, you know, in all kinds of weeds that I'm still fighting to this day, and I will probably fight them forever. But so that's a good experience of trying to get rid of crabgrass out of my garden. But so this is the first garden that I have that I'm responsible for. But ever since I could remember, I always loved being outside and loved being in nature and study and observe, you know, trees, and I would climb trees and look at birds. And I was always such a nature kid, because I grew up in Poland, and I grew up in an urban area, you know, in a city. But basically, just like a half an hour bike ride away is all these farms and woods and lakes. It's sort of like a very beautiful region, in Poznań, like around Poznań, Poland. And there is a national park right nearby. So with my parents, I would basically every weekend would just go for day trips and explore, you know, go swimming in the lake or, you know, whatever, just go bike through the woods. And I loved it, and I just soaked it all up. And, you know, when I went to school and took my biology classes, I just, like, literally loved it. Like, I'm like tofu when it comes to information about biology. And in our little apartment, like, you should see, I don't have any pictures, but in my room, I just had, you know how, like, teenage girls have, like, posters of their, you know, boy bands and like that on the, like I had literally animals and plants and horses, like all like posters all over my room. And then I also had shelves filled with potted plants. So I almost had like a little mini greenhouse at age like 11.
Oh my goodness.
Of just like all these different kinds of house plants that I really took care of, and you know, I loved it. So then I moved to America. So I moved to Boston area with my family when I was about 15. And my parents also live in the suburbs. So we got a house but they're, you know, their backyard is all shaded. So my mom never grew any vegetables, but I just helped her, you know, grow perennials and things like that. So I guess that would be my first gardening experience. But now that I actually have my own garden that I take care of, but it's all very recent. I mean, I'm just a beginner right now, you know, just figuring out as I go.
Well, you know, I always say like people who are beginning kind of like things stand out to them that a little more than people who have been doing it for a long time. So I think you're going to have lots of golden seeds for us today because, you know, those like early mistakes and challenges are fresher and newer in your mind. So,
right.
Wow. Well, that what an interesting background. I just have to ask. So do you have like brothers and sisters?
No. So I grew up as the only child. I just kind of, you know, it was just me and my parents, and then with friends, you know, as soon as I went to school, I basically was like gone the whole day, and I would run around literally, you know, into the woods because we had my friend's house had like this patch of woods nearby and sort of, but like an urban area park, so it wasn't like just deep woods, you know. But so we would just basically be playing outside all day until we got called for dinner. And then, you know, like we didn't really have, I don't know. I mean, we had computers, but we didn't have internet. We didn't have like just growing up. We didn't have like all these games that kids have now. So we would just basically be outside all day. And that was our playground. And, you know, I loved it. I loved like playing in the mud and, you know, like climb trees. And it was really cool. It was really cool growing up. So I think also that sort of made me understand the relationships in nature a little bit better just because I was in nature all the time. So I kind of now it helps me to garden because I understand, you know, if you, for example, if you like spray pesticide, I understand that it's going to affect all of these other things, all of these other insects, not just the ones that you're trying to kill. And I think it helped me to grow up outside and notice all these relationships because I just basically played in it. So,
nice. Sounds like a nice childhood. So, and it sounds like you still learned everything you needed to learn if you're a biology major at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. So then how did you learn how to garden organically? Like, did you research it or did your, like, it sounds like your mom didn't really do, like, how'd you learn how to garden
using I guess I just put my hands in the dirt and sort of trial and error, but also a lot of it I researched, and internet is really a great resource if you sort of even just Google. I mean, there is so many amazing articles out there for anything. I mean, if you type in how to grow tomatoes, it's like it never ends how many articles pop up, so it's almost like you have to weed through to see like which ones are really helpful and which ones are maybe a little bit less, just because everybody writes at this point, you know, it's just amazing the amount of information that you can find. But my favorite resource for finding information, like if I have a question or I'm not sure how to grow something or I'm not sure how to do something, is a local gardening Facebook group, just because everybody is sort of in the same area and everybody is in the same growing zone. And, you know, if it's like the amount of rainfall is all the same because it's local, we're all sort of, it's just the region, you know, south of Boston. So The Facebook group is called South Shore Gardening Buy Sell Trade. But we're not really buying or trading anything. If anything, we're trading information. So it's cool because every single day it's exactly like your Facebook group, Jackie, like the organic podcast Facebook group, where people just post pictures of what they grow to sort of, show and share with everybody. But if you have a question about like what bug is this, or what is, why do my tomatoes look like this, or when do I plant peas, or I mean any kind of questions, there are really some amazing people on that group that answer immediately. I mean, people just have such amount of knowledge that is just humbling. It really is really cool to be able to ask anything that you can come up with, and they usually have the answer. So that's just kind of how I started if I couldn't find something online or something was so specific, I would just post a question and I would get like 30 answers, and it's it makes it really easy. And it also you get from that you get such it's like you get support and encouragement to do it, because sometimes growing can be intimidating, especially for new growers and for beginners. It can be intimidating, but I mean, ultimately, it really, you don't know unless you try it. So it's great to have the support from an online group of people who are nearby, and then like you say, if you say, oh, your pictures are so beautiful, it makes you really good inside,
I totally agree. And like, this doesn't really have anything to do with gardening, but it does have to do with Facebook. Like, this week I got to go on like the most amazing, like definitely my top five hikes ever in Glacier National Park, which is a place I live really close to, but I always have a hard time finding people to go there. And a couple of years ago, I found a hiking group in Glacier Park. And
Yes.
so this amazing woman took me and three other people from up here, and then another person from the Flathead, on this just incredible hike. And it was just so nice to have somebody. She's like, I've done this 10 times. Like, she knew, the trail really well. She like kept us safe. She kept us, moving forward at a fast enough pace, but not too hard. We made sure everybody, had lots of water and everything. It was just like the connections that you make on Facebook to me are incredible and what you can learn. So
Yeah, I
I'm
think I
so
saw the
excited to hear
picture.
that in a buy sell trade group, and that especially that it sounds like they're using or kind of organic techniques.
Yes,
So that's
absolutely.
good to hear. Excellent. So do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year?
Yeah, so I have, well, something that has been growing well consistently every year for me is zucchini and squash and all different. I have yellow, just your summer squash and butternut squash, and I've tried every year to put it, like this year I have acorn squash and the blue Hubbard squash that I got. Actually, I
Oh.
got the heirloom seeds from a neighbor. So this is like amazing,
Nice.
right? So these are really doing well every single year. I mean, I have green zucchini coming out of my ears. I mean, I literally try to find like new recipes of what to do with it, because I give out to my family, I give out to my neighbors, and we eat it every day, and then we still like have extra. So so that's some the definitely squash family seems to be doing really well in my garden. And
Nice.
tomatoes are doing well. It's just that we have squirrel problems, so I'm like running out of ideas of how to try to deter squirrels. I have a
My mom
fence.
has squirrel problems too.
Yeah, and they just attack the tomatoes. I mean, as soon as there is like a blush of color, on the green tomato, I mean, they just pick it. It doesn't matter how big it is. You'd think it's amazing that such a little animal can lift such a big, fruit, but they just pick it and they leave a little hole, and they usually put it like right on top of my gate, so that when I get back from work, I can see it, and it's like, ah, ha ha ha, I got your tomato, like they're taunting me. So I tried, and again in the Facebook group, people have suggested to use Irish Spring soap that supposedly the critters don't like the smell of the Irish Spring soap. I tried that, and I don't know if it's helping, but I still get my tomatoes are still munched on. So I don't know if they would be munched on more if I didn't use the soap. It's kind of hard to tell, but mm-hmm. I still get the squirrels. So that's something that didn't, isn't growing quite so well. And I just, I've just basically tried things like peppers and cauliflower and I mean, anything. And cauliflower for some reason didn't do anything. I mean, it just grew and died. So that did not work well for me. So I'm just not going to grow it again. But
cauliflower needs like a cool, I think it's like broccoli and needs like a cooler. Did you put it in like early maybe? I think we've had challenges with cauliflower. Mike's finally getting that down pretty good though, but yeah, it's taken years.
Well, so it's funny because I put it in at the same time as I put broccoli. So I wonder if the broccoli, because the broccoli grew fine. So I wonder if the cauliflower affected it, that it doesn't want to, and it didn't grow next to it or anything, but it has the same exposure and the timing and water is all the same. It's just that it didn't want to, I don't know, maybe just the seedlings that I got weren't good or I did something wrong, but it's the kind of thing that you try, but, and I'm not really crazy about cauliflower anyway, so
right.
So I'm just like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to try something else because I don't even like cauliflower that much. So if it didn't grow, I'll just take that as a sign that I'm not going to grow it.
I was thinking maybe it was like the seeds or the plants that you got. But right. Yeah, like that's a big thing that people always say is like, don't bother wasting time and energy on something that you don't really love to eat anyway.
Right. But you know what a really important part thing is that I noticed, that I learned, this is like, so this is my third year, is really keep a journal. I mean, I never do it. I'm guilty of just, I'm like, oh, I'll remember it. You're not going to remember it. The next year, you're not going to remember.
I'm so glad you said that. I can't remember the next week.
Right. No, I mean,
you think I'm never going to forget this. And then a week later, you're like, huh, what?
Right. You're like, what? And then, it's also, I think, really good thing. In my area, there's a lot of people that have gardeners. So I have literally neighbors walking by and my garden is visible from the street. So as I'm working in the garden, there'll be neighbors just walking, just strolling by, they're going on the walks and things. And they'll say hello and just sort of wave. And I always invite them over. I'm like, please show me what do I do with this or just look at my garden or whatever. So my one neighbor, the same neighbor that gave me the Hubbard seeds, and he also gave me a bunch of other plants. He's really just like such a wealth of information. I mean, he probably forgot more information than like I'll ever know in my whole lifetime. He's just so smart and so experienced, and it's really cool when you have a question to just talk to your neighbors and it's nice to have when you have your own garden, really how many connections you make, because it's like almost like a conversation piece, like you wouldn't necessarily like stop in front of somebody's yard and admire their yard if they didn't have a beautiful garden. And that provokes a conversation and you make a connection, like you get to know that person. So that's really cool. I noticed that with the garden especially, it helps me to make, conversations with people that live near me. So it's nice because I'm yeah, so I mean, some people, we're sort of a young couple in this like well-established neighborhood. So for everybody is, maybe a little bit older than us. So it's not, we wouldn't necessarily find ourselves in the same social situations. And it's sometimes, sometimes you feel shy or you're not going to like go and knock on somebody's door. I mean, it's unfortunately not something that you would do these days, but if you have, you're just walking by or people are jogging or walking their dogs or walking with their kids, when you have a garden in the front, and that makes you more likely to be outside as, people are walking by, and that creates those connections that are really cool, because now I feel like I know everybody that lives around me and I'm relatively new to the neighborhood, and it's all because of my garden. So That's another plus of having a garden is
And
you
you're
get to know your
probably
neighbors.
inspiring others as they see your progress. They're like, wow, look what Boston is doing. So we can look what we can do too.
Right. Well, I hope so.
And you know
Thanks.
who talks about that a lot is that Curtis Stone, who wrote the book The Urban Farmer, I think it's called, and that's his website. And I love his book. And just he talks a lot about when you have a garden in your front yard, it's going to encourage those conversations, and people are going to come by. And that's a great, he's all about educating the public. And he talks about that's helpful if you want to start a business, that you're going to create a lot of connections that way too. And also just, the whole part of educating people about the different options out there and what you can do to grow, build your soil and grow healthy plants.
Right,
So,
exactly.
Basha, is there something you're excited to try next year that you haven't done before, or something you're going to do different?
Well, so I'm going to upgrade. So for the mulch in my garden, I have been inspired by local flower growers, like flower farmers. I've seen that they use landscaping fabric instead of like straw mulch or any different kind of mulch, just because it's easier to just, I mean, it comes in a roll and you just roll it out, then you make holes in it and you plant your plants into that. And because I basically, my garden plot was basically a lawn, a bed of weeds. It's really hard to get rid of all these grasses that just keep growing. So regular, like a straw mulch wouldn't work for me because everything just grows right up and overtakes the vegetables. So I last year I decided to use landscaping fabric, the kind of fabric that you put under, that people put under the mulch. It lets the water through, but it does, it's like a weed barrier. And that is working incredibly well for me. I mean, I literally cut the time that I have to spend weeding. I cut that time by 70%. It's really crazy how well it works. But I used like a cheaper kind because I mean, I have a pretty big garden, so I didn't want to spend that much money on it. And I didn't know if it's going to work well or not. So I tried like a sort of like a. You can only really use it once, and I hate to like throw out, like what I, because it's basically like shredding at this point, so it's kind of tearing, and I think it's only, I think it's meant to go underneath something, like under mulch, so it's not really standing up to the test of, the sun and the elements. So I want to, next year, I want to get like a more professional grade type of fabric that's made out of recycled fibers, and it will, I think that will last for many years, and I can reuse that, and everything that I can reuse is excellent. So I'm going to try that. And so what I do is I basically add compost to the soil and I till it, and then I lay the fabric on top of that, make holes, whatever I want to plant. I mean, depending on, like, zucchini, for example, needs like 3 feet circle of space. I mean, they're huge plants. So depending on what you grow, you sort of get the spacing. You can almost like literally walk around with like a measuring stick. So then I make a hole and I plant my plants. I get seedlings at a local nursery that are organic, and I really like to choose, like to go to local businesses, like small businesses rather than big box stores, because I noticed that stores like Home Depot, not only do they use all kinds of pesticides and stuff on their plants, but their plants aren't necessarily grown in our zone. So then they don't do that well because they're, I mean, these plants were like grown somewhere, and they were traveled so far that, you're really not going to get the same results as if you're going to, just like a small nursery where people are actually friendly and they actually know what they're selling, so they'll also give you good advice on how to grow it. And then that plant itself is, I noticed that art tends to do a lot better than a big box store. So I like to give my business to those local independent businesses. So then I plant my seedlings, and then I lay soaker hoses on, you know, just sort of amongst the plants, and I have a well. So then I just, you know, every morning I just turn on the well and let the water soak into the roots, and that seems to do the trick for me. And also I noticed that the weed barrier fabric helps to keep the water in the soil. And, you know, now that we have this crazy drought, like, the soil stays moist a lot longer than if it was just exposed. So that's what I'm going to try next year, is go for, like, upgrade my weed barrier to something that's reusable and something that's going to last longer. So I'll try to go to, like, a farm supply store and get a roll of, like, a professional grade weed barrier fabric.
Nice. You are just dropping the golden seeds all over the place. That was some great advice and things. I know you're going to be inspiring people, and they're going to be like, ooh, I could try that. That's going to help me save time. And I think that's, like, somebody asked me about my podcast, like, what's the biggest challenge that my listeners faced? And I've kind of created a couple of polls and surveys. If anybody wants to fill them out, they're on my website or in the Facebook group. But pretty much the biggest response I've got is time, finding time right. to get everything done, finding time to keep up with the garden, finding time to water and weed and plant even, and then harvesting at the end. And so any time saving tips, which is why I wrote my, I have a, like, a little PDF called 7 ways to save time to gardeners, find time to garden. And that, and, you know, definitely, like, all those things that you just shared, and you made it really sound, you know, like a easy thing, or maybe not an easy thing, but, like, as something possible to do to help people be more successful in their garden, is, you know, using that weed barrier. And Lisa Ziegler, who she was, like, on my case last year, because I talked to her twice. She was, like, my guest number 2. And then I talked to her again, like, around guest number 18. She's like, Jackie, I'm going to send you some of that weed cover or weed fabric or whatever it is, floating row cover fabric or whatever. And so I finally bought it for Mike. When I saw it in action last summer, I went on a farm tour down at Lower Valley Farm.
Yeah.
And I saw Mandy Girth use it. And then I was like, oh, that's how it works. And it just, like, seeing it in person just brought it so to life. And so then I bought it for Mike this year. So, yeah, that stuff is amazing. Finding some high quality. Well, Lisa, that was the nice thing about Lisa's website, was it told you specifically what to buy. Like the different grade kind of explains, she has really good examples of, like, what the different grades are and what works and that kind of information. But awesome. So do you want to tell us about something that didn't work so well this season? You kind of mentioned the problem with the squirrels with this meat. Oh yeah. I just got to say one quick thing about the squirrels. So another woman in the Facebook group did ask about, she's having a problem with mice and rodents getting down. And so I talked to this other girl who lives near me the other day, Naomi. And she was saying what she did was put up, like, she buried some wine bottles in the ground, and that creates, like, this wind thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that would work. My mom's problem with her squirrels is they climb down the pear tree. They jump off the roof. So the wine bottles. But I was just thinking, just, like, any kind of a noise maker might help scare the rodents away. But I don't know. Squirrels are pretty pesky, and they are everywhere for sure. Yeah.
So my next door neighbor has he puts out birdseed year round. So, I mean, his backyard, I can sort of look out and I can see through over my garden. I can see into his yard, and his yard is like a scene from Bambi. I mean, it's so funny because he has, and it's beautiful because he has all these birds that have come to visit the bird feeder, but he has, like, literally 9 or 10 squirrels. I'm not kidding. I actually counted once because his lawn was just covered in squirrels, you know, because as the birds drop the seeds, and he feeds them regularly. I mean, he's really good about it. He must refill that bird feeder every single day for the whole entire year. So all the animals are very used to it, and it's sort of very dependable, and it's cool to see. But then I see those squirrels and I'm like, yeah, now that they, you know, have their lunch of the bird seed, now they're gonna come to dinner to my place and eat the raw tomatoes. I mean, or maybe that's their drink. So that's another somebody recommended that I put out you know, if they're thirsty, because I'm sure they are thirsty now because we've barely gotten any rain, to put out water for them. And maybe if they're going after the tomato because it has all the juices in it, you know, maybe they're thirsty. So I have bird baths that, you know, we have a ton of birds. So because we have bird houses sort of like scattered all over our property, and the next door neighbor has this bird houses. And I mean, it's like a bird sanctuary here. We love our birds. And also the birds help us, because every morning I see, when I go out in the garden, I see just like a cloud of sparrows just rise up from the garden, and I don't really have pest problems. So I think that the sparrows really help pick, you know, beetles and things like that, or insects off of my plants. So that's another tip that I can give to people, is become a bird friend.
I love that.
And it's really cool because you can see it adds like, you know, you add just another element to your garden, right? You support the just like living animals. So you support the wildlife, and the birds are really beneficial for the garden, that I noticed. I mean, they are not eating anything that I don't want to be eaten. So they're not, you know, doing any damage, but I really believe that they're actually helping, you know, keep, because I have all kinds of lettuce and everything, and I have no problem with slugs. I have no problems with any kind of insects or worms or pests or anything like that. I even, we had the gypsy moths really bad this year because our winter was milder than usual. So everybody was posting like, you know, their fruits, trees and everything was like covered in gypsy moths. I had no gypsy moths. And I really believe it's because we have so many birds around that literally just pick them off. So I love to see the birds, and I really encourage everybody to just invite the birds into their yard. But at the same time, you have to be careful that you don't also invite, you know, squirrels and other things. So it's always, you know, everything that you do is not in a vacuum, right? So it's going to affect every other living creature that you have in your yard. So with an example like this, with the birds, you know, you put out a bird seed to attract the birds. Well, you also are going to attract, you know, squirrels and chipmunks and wild turkeys and all kinds of other creatures. And, you know, on the flip side of that, if you do something like you spray a pesticide or some kind of chemicals, you're not just going to affect your target creature, you know, whether it's a herbicide or you know, a pesticide, you're not just going to affect that one specific thing that's a nuisance. You're going to affect everything else and some of the beneficial organisms as well. So I really, the reason why I garden organic is because I like to think that I'm aware of all the relationships that are there in nature, and that we are just a part of nature, right? So we kind of have our homes and we have our front lawns, but it's within this bigger ecosystem that, you know, all the wildlife is, you know, that's their home too. And they live here just as well as we do, and they're trying to make a life for themselves. So we kind of have to really remember that everything that we do out in our yard affects everything, not just, you know, not just the pretty songbirds that you look at. You know, everything else is going to come also. If you spread bird seed, you're going to get all kinds of creatures come in as well. So So I really think that, you know, the squirrel problem is exasperated because we have so much bird seed, and I don't put out bird seed anymore just because of that. I mean, part of it is because my neighbor is doing such a good job that I really don't have to, but I have a lot of bird houses, and I actually really like to make bird houses. I mean, that's like my creative outlet for the winter is I like to get, you know, I like to get the ones, you know, they sell them at Audubon Society or at some I think Animal Rescue League or all these different organizations sell them as a fundraiser. So then you can, and they're sort of like just raw, you know, just one very simple. And I like to paint them because that makes them pretty. So I like to do that. And I also, you know, give them as gifts to my family, and they always really enjoy that. But I like to, because I like to see the birds out in my yard, so I like to put shelter for them.
Aw, you are just the golden seed dropper and spreader. You're just full of great inspiration and awesomeness. I love all that.
Oh, thank you.
I love birds. I was raised in a big bird watching. We went nature hikes and bird watching like almost every weekend, it seemed like. Or not almost every weekend, but a lot of weekends. My parents were really good about fostering that in us.
Yeah.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, my good friend, Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener Podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. simplyjosephine.com.
Announce my first sponsor, Robin Kellison from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
All right, Basha. So we're going to get to the root of things here. So tell us, what's your least, is there anything, do you have a least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there anything you got to force yourself to get out there and do? It sounds like you kind of like it all.
Well, I really do like it all. And so I was thinking about it when I, you know, as also when you interview your other guests, you ask those questions and I sort of thought about it. And I mean, it's ironic, but my least favorite, I mean, I like to do everything that's garden related. I mean, if I could just like literally quit my job and just go and full time be in my garden, I would. But I guess ironically, harvesting and just picking, you know, and sort of like, even if it's a lettuce or something that I just have to pick and then that, you know, that plant then is then done, that is my least favorite activity to do, ironically, right? Because I grow a vegetable and flower garden and I have all kinds of different plants out there, and you think that I grow them for the fruit and for the vegetable, but I almost like just grow it for the fun of growing it. So then when I harvest the plant, and it's almost like a bittersweet moment, because you enjoy it, now you get to enjoy the harvest and you get to have this delicious meal, but it's almost like a bittersweet moment because I feel like, you know, that it's soon the garden will be over, right? I mean, you know, we only have another couple of months maybe of a really good season left here. So now that everything is sort of really getting ready to, you know, I mean, we're going to have like a flush of tomatoes, and I've been picking beans and cucumbers and things, and plants are doing really well now, but it's almost like I don't even want to do it because I don't want the season to end. Sounds like
I can totally relate to that.
But I would, you know, I don't mind to put the work into it. You know, I love, mm-hmm. like my favorite activity to do, for example, is digging. So in the spring, where you have to sort of turn the compost, like you spread the compost and you sort of till the soil, I just use a shovel. And that like is my favorite thing to do, is when the soil is getting warm and, you know, after the ridiculous long winter that we have in Boston here, and we have like 4 feet of snow. Once all of that melts and the soil is getting warm and the days are getting longer, I get so excited to just like put my like nasty jeans on and just go out there and dig holes all day. I mean, it's like, that's like, I love to do that. So the preparing of the garden and getting the soil ready and like wake up all the plants is really, really cool thing to do. But then, on the flip side, once all of that is done, that is sort of bittersweet because you know that, you know, the season is almost over. And then there's other things to do, of course, but just, you know, you feel like you put all that work in into the garden, and then it's, you know, then it's sort of done its purpose. And some of those plants are going to survive because they're perennial, and a lot of the vegetables, you know, they're annual. So it's almost sad to see them go. But then you're going to get to grow them next year, and you learn from what grew well and what didn't grow well. So that's cool. But yeah, I it's funny. I like ask my boyfriend to go and pick things and harvest things because I'm like, I'm just like too tired at the end of a day to go and pick things. I'm like, I'll just grow it for the sake of growing it. And if you want to, I love to eat it, and he actually prepares like really like the zucchini, and I like to grill everything because it gets so hot inside the house that we just go outside and grill. Mm-hmm. So all of the vegetables basically, with maybe the like wax beans. I don't grill wax beans. I don't know if you could even grill them. Maybe you could, but everything that we grow, we like to grill. So zucchini, like with just a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper, is amazing off of the grill. I mean, I could eat that every day.
I had some of that yesterday.
Really? I say that I could eat it every day, but literally we do eat it every day. I mean, we put it as a side to everything. And grilled tomatoes are so, I mean, they're delicious. Tomatoes are delicious under any form, but I think last year we discovered to just like literally slice the tomato in half and put it on the grill with some salt and pepper. I mean, it's like, oh, it's the best thing. I could eat that every day. And really nothing beats a tomato that you grew in a garden that, you know, is right there for you to pick it, and you pick it fresh and you eat it that same day. Like that sort of farm to table approach is just so cool. And I really wish that with the food system that we have in this country. So what I noticed growing up in Poland, you have a lot easier access to locally grown produce because I grew up in a city, but just outside on the outskirts of a city is a very rural area. So there's all these farms that grow all kinds of things and vegetables and crops, and you just really have a very easy access to farmers markets, and they're out there every day. So, you know, you don't have to sort of wait once a week, like around in Boston area, we have farmers market like on different day. Like my local Holbrook farmers market is once a week on a Saturday, and you don't always, like, you're not always around on a Saturday, you know, on that specific time, on that specific day to go. And I mean, you know, it's really nice that they do that, but it's sort of very small, and it's, the food is so, you know, the produce that they grow is so expensive just because they have so much overhead, and it really is expensive to grow organically. I mean, compared to conventional methods that are here. So I think that's really unfortunate that we don't have such a easy access to locally grown produce, because I think that would really make people's diets better, because the produce that's grown locally, that, you know, is picked at the peak of freshness and at the peak of ripeness, just tastes so much better. And I mean, I wonder why kids don't like to eat vegetables, or some kids don't like to eat vegetables. Is it because the vegetables just don't taste good? I mean, I would go to, you know, a grocery store, and I would pick up tomato, and, you know, in winter, which,
oh, right.
Well, obviously tomatoes don't grow in winter. I mean, they're all like greenhouse grown or grown in Mexico, and they just travel like days to get to the shelf of the store, and then they're refrigerated, and they have all kinds of stuff sprayed on them, like, you know, preservatives and things like that. And just that produce doesn't taste good anymore. So it really is unfortunate that we don't have an easier way for local farmers to just be able to sell their produce to the local community. I think that would be a lot healthier, and I think that would, you know, that's doing all kinds of great things because it supports the local businesses, but I think it makes everybody healthier as well if the vegetables are taste better. I mean, you're more likely to eat them, of course, right?
And yeah, and if you have access to fresh produce more, it makes you more likely to eat them, like you were saying.
Right, right. Yeah, so I really mean that would be like one thing that I would like to change. If I think one of the questions that you sent me was if you could change one thing, you know, on a global scale, what it would be. I think for me, coming from another country and seeing how it works over there, or at least how it used to work 15 years ago. I'm sure now it's with the there's more bigger grocery stores as well over there, which would be a sad thing. But just sort of to bring it back to the way it used to, where where do you go to buy your food? You would go to buy your food at a small, independent, local grocery store where they're more likely to have all natural, you know, safe, organic produce that they, you know, the local community grows for itself, so that there isn't like all of this traveling of the food. And yeah, I mean, some things are obviously like tomatoes, some things are seasonal, so you shouldn't expect to be able to buy some of the things in the middle of winter. But then, you know, you give all, like, it's just like, what do you choose to do? I mean, do you choose to support local business that, you know, now that money is going to somebody's kid's college fund, or somebody's daughter can go and take dance classes? Or do you want to give money to like a Walmart CEO, you know, so that it doesn't really care about, you know, in their huge factory farms? I mean, they don't care what kind of, you know, like the Roundup Ready corn and the GMO, like they don't care what that does to the local environment where it grows. So like if all the farms in, like, you know, central states and in California, I mean, those big farm practices literally are destroying the soil there. They're destroying the water, you know, there's just put up so many toxins and they're destroying the local environment. And I, you know, living here in Boston, I really do care what happens in California, you know, because we're all connected and we all live in the same earth. So why would I want to be contributing to them pumping out, you know, synthetic fertilizers out in California, where it's clearly harming their soil? You know, I want
to, the people who have to work on those farms.
Right, exactly. And I mean, it affects everything. So like even, you know, like the meat farms, I mean, I would so much rather go and buy, you know, a hunk of beef, because I can't be a vegetarian. I have to have my meat, unfortunately. I just really like it and I need it. But what I really want to choose is beef that's raised, you know, with that's animal centered, so that it's you know, the animals for the entire lives are happy. They eat grass and they can, you know, wander around in the, you know, under the blue sky, and they see the sun, and they, you know, they have healthy food and they're happy. I mean, I would like to think that, you know, the animals that I'm consuming, you know, that somebody actually cares for them. So that's something that I'm passionate about, and that has to do with both produce and you know, meat or animals, is that I would like to have a system for food, for growing food, where it's actually better for the environment and not so profit driven. So I understand that, you know, all the organic produce is a lot more expensive than conventionally grown, but it's almost like a double-edged.
I don't think it has to be in the end.
I don't think so.
Like you said, it's like, well, if it's just because it's cheaper right now up front. And that was a big part. I was watching that GMO OMG again last night, and they talk about that the conventional way is just unsustainable. It's eating up our topsoil like in incredible amounts. We can't keep going destroying the topsoil that way by putting all these toxins in it to grow a bigger crop right now. In the long run, we're going to run out of our farmland. And then I was also thinking about, like, Kim Romerell, who was my guest a few weeks ago from New Zealand, was talking about a cruelty-free diet. And I just love that, talking about raising animals humanely and making sure, you know where you're getting your food from. And I you know, I love that about my podcast and my wonderful guests like you, because I think it's so full of people who care about these things, because, you know, the majority of my day I run into people that don't even think about it and have no knowledge of it, or just like it's just totally off their radar. They just normally think you go to the store, you buy what's on the shelves, and they never even think twice about it. And so it's so nice that you're sharing. So what are you going to do with your degree in biology from UMass? Are you going to go back and get a master's in environmental studies and work on sustainable systems? Or like, what's your plan? Can I just break in here and ask really quick?
Well, yes, what's nice about a degree in biology is you could really go anywhere with it. So I am just so interested in literally everything that I don't have a specific, like I did an independent study, sort of like an internship with proteomics. So I like to go into research. And so we had sort of like protein folding type internship that I did, but I wasn't keen on sitting in front of a computer all day. So that was basically what my internship was just computer work. And in the grand scheme of things, it has to do with hormones and protein folding and how they, you know, sort of interacted chemically. And while that's really cool and I really am interested in it, I really hated to be sitting inside with in front of a computer all day. So now I'm kind of reconsidering, because I sort of, my plan was to go into more of that field, like research and sort of, you know, lab research. Mm-hmm. But I mean, now that I have my garden and I am recognizing how much I love to be outside and work with plants and work with, you know, outside in the environment, maybe I mean, I don't know. I'm like at the point right now, like almost like a fork in the road, right? That mm-hmm. I think since I love it so much, I should probably consider going into a field where, like you said, like an environmental study, or you know, and maybe take classes in environmental study and ecology. But so I don't know. So that's like my whole family is asking me, like, what are you going to do with that degree? And I mean, it's almost like I'm just sort of seeing what opportunities I have and just going into that. You know, I don't want to be too picky, but at the same time, I really am recognizing that I really love to be outside. So I guess anything that has to do with the environment or growing things or interacting with animals, I mean, I love it all. And I'm very excited to, you know, spend as much time outside as I can. Bye.
Awesome. You are just the best guest.
Oh, thanks.
So what is the best gardening advice you have ever received?
So I've been given so many wonderful advices, like I said, from my neighbors and from the community and from my family and from you even, and from your guests. You know, it's really cool to listen to all, like, I just, you know, some of the things that I can't even remember. I mean, I, you know, you learn so much. But what I really did notice, especially now that it's so dry outside, is to water, like to have like a good system for watering your garden, because it really will make a difference in how the garden grows and how all the plants produce for you and how healthy they are, is to water early in the morning and directly to the soil. So don't sort of spray on top of leaves. I see a lot of people, like I see even like walking around the neighborhood, they'll like just sprinkle water like on top of the leaves of, of that tend to get powdery mildew. So in our, because it gets, our summers are humid here, so we get like our squash plants and tomato, like we get a lot of sort of the fungal diseases on top of the leaves. And also, you know, roses get it, and you get all different kinds of plants that get mildew and different kinds of fungal problems. So if you spray directly to the soil and avoid the water splashing back on the leaves, you'll be less likely to get those problems. And you also, if you think about it, you're conserving water because the, you know, the water goes directly into where it's supposed to go. You're not sort of like splashing it all over where it's going to evaporate, and you're not going to get, I mean, the plant doesn't utilize that water. The plant doesn't need the water on its leaves. It needs it at the root and to keep the soil moist and cool. So that would be like the biggest and the most important advice that I've gotten. And I don't really remember a specific person that would give me that advice. I think I've just sort of observed, I just observed my mom do it in her garden, or, I mean, I don't, this is something that I've sort of like known for as long as I can remember. And that is the most important thing that I really tend to do. And with the silk or hoses, you know, so the hose that I have are just sort of weep water very slowly, and it's sort of like it just soaks right into the soil, and I let my well go, you know, pump the water for about an hour. So then it's not just, and so I feel like the water is really soaking deeply into the ground. So then you don't have to water as much because, you know, the water actually goes exactly where you want it to go. And that ends up being better for the plants because they don't have as much changes in the, you know, their soil sort of stays consistent for longer.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's, I noticed that. And yeah, I mean, like I've been saying, you know, the birds really help with the insects. So if you invite wildlife, the beneficial wildlife, you know, not the woodchucks and squirrels, but if you invite birds by providing them shelter and food and water, you can really get them to work for you. So that would be another advice that I've been given that I really follow like religiously every day.
Nice. That reminds me of two people who were on, Richard Wiswall, who's wrote the Organic Gardener or the Organic Farmer Business Handbook, talked mm-hmm. about the difference that just water can make. Like the biggest piece of advice, I think he said he gives new farmers that ask him, like the number one thing he says right off the bat in the beginning is, you know, watch your water because it can triple your production. Like that's the biggest growth area he sees with new farmers.
Right.
And then I had another guest from Missoula, which is close to me, David, I can't remember how to say his name, Schmettering. And he just like has this little like urban sanctuary just in his backyard, like in the middle of Missoula, because he does a lot of those things you're saying about bringing in beneficial wildlife. So great advice there. Lots of golden seeds. Basha, you are just so wonderful. So tell us, because I'm trying to keep things moving because we are over an hour already.
Yeah, and
I could talk to you for hours. I'm sure listeners could listen to you for hours. But what's your favorite tool? Like if you had to move from Boston, what could you not live without?
So I couldn't live without my shovel. I think I mentioned it before that I just love to dig holes. And partly it's because I have such a nice soil that I just literally, I planted a few trees in our gardens. I planted peach tree and an apricot. So basically you have to dig this huge gigantic hole. And with my shovel, I mean, it's just like a standard, you know, nothing fancy, like just like a 3 foot long shovel with like a wooden handle. I can dig like a 3 foot hole in like 10 minutes because I have such a nice soil. And that really, maybe that's why it's so cool to do it, because it's, my soil is so nice. And I recognize that not everybody has that night. Like people have rocky soil and then digging is not very nice to do. But for me, I could just like, I just love the smell of the dirt, and, you know, my earth is like crawling with worms, and like the earthworms that are just sort of churning it. And it's just like, I love it. I love being in a soil. It just makes me happy. I think there was a study, and I can't recall the name of it, but they're saying that there is some kind of microbes in the soil that actually are capable of elevating your mood. And I know that there is a science behind it, but it sounds kind of funny, but I can definitely attest to that just being in the, you know, having your hands in the dirt, it just makes my day so much better. And it doesn't matter what kind of stress I have at work or school or what kind of, you know, what's going on in your day. If you can just spend 10 minutes planting something or weeding or being close to the earth, it will just make your day so much better. So I like to, you know, I like to personally dig things. And in the pictures that I've sent you, I guess you could see that in my garden, I dug the trenches because I wanted to put permanent beds and paths. So I basically like moved the huge amounts of earth and rocks and things to sort of make gravel pathways. So I dug like 6-inch paths all over my garden. And so that was a lot of digging, and I just loved every minute of it. I mean, I couldn't wait. Like when I got back from work, I just like first thing I did was just to go and dig. But that's just me. I mean, I mentioned to you at the beginning, I'm just a girl with a shovel. Like I just go and dig things.
I'm just a girl with a shovel. I love that. That's funny because Richard Mata, my last guest that I just put his episode up yesterday, finally got it edited. He said the same thing about dirt. He said his brother-in-law was like, man, you must really love what you're doing because I never heard anybody so passionate about dirt before. Dirt he hasn't met you yet, though.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I need to listen. I haven't gotten a chance to listen to that episode yet, but I'm really interested. And I think you had another guest that was the dirt queen, or I forget, somebody else that just, yeah.
There was Alyssa from, I think it's called Dirtworks, that grows, they're like selling compost and dirt.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's, I think that's really cool.
She's been a very popular thing. Her show has been downloaded a lot all of a sudden for such a recent guest. All right. So Basha, what's your favorite recipe? Is it the grilled zucchinis, or did you have a recipe you wanted to talk about that you'd like to cook from the garden?
The easiest thing to do that we do all the time is literally the grilled zucchini. So what we do is we pick the zucchini and I don't even wash it. I mean, I just wipe the dirt right off of it. But so the fabric actually helps because your produce isn't sitting on the, so that's another tip that I can give to others is if you have the fabric that's directly on the soil, things don't get moldy and, you know, you can have your squash sitting on the fabric and it's nice and clean. But anyway, so I pick the zucchini and I just cut it lengthwise into maybe 1/4 inch slices. And because they're lengthwise, there is, you know, less slices, so they're easier to turn on the grill. But I use a misto. So I spray olive oil, just like, it's like literally mists. It's almost like, it's almost like Pam, you know, like the baking spray, but you can into misto bottle, you can put whatever kind of oil you want. So I use virgin olive oil. So I just spray it lightly with the olive oil and I just put salt and pepper and goes on the grill for like 2 minutes or however done you want it. And it's delicious. I mean, it's like, it's almost sweet. You could, because when the vegetable is so fresh and ripe in the sun, you get all those sugars breaking down in it. So the grill really helps to bring out the sweetness in the vegetable. And it literally tastes like you drizzled honey on it. I mean, it's so good. So
I know. Totally. I totally agree.
If you've never had it, you have to try it. And same thing to go. I recommend it to everybody. It's my favorite thing to eat in the summer is grilled zucchini.
And I think what you said about only cooking it for 2 minutes is really important because zucchini that gets overcooked and mushy is not very good. I know a lot of people like, zucchini, but that fresh. And then the other tip I always like to give people about zucchinis is cut them when they're small. Like, you know, don't let them grow into those massive, huge, like, I know it's fun to have, like, you can grow a giant zucchini, but they're much better when they're like, you know, the size of, bigger than a quarter, you know, but the size of like a canning jar lid, maybe at the most would be like the biggest I would go. Like cut them when they're small. Don't, you know, harvest those. And then that also kind of helps with your, what do I do with all these zucchinis? Because if you're harvesting them when you're small, you're going to be eating them more. And I put zucchini on everything, pizza, sandwiches, I love zucchinis, but small and fresh cooked. So they're nice and crunchy and al dente, not super, I like that part about that, just for a couple of minutes.
Right.
And I like that spray bottle of olive oil tip. That's a great one. Would you say it's a Misto?
Yeah, it's called Misto, and the Misto did not pay me for saying, you know, recommending them. So I'm not getting any money here, but I use it for everything. I mean, I use it especially with things like salads and vegetables when you want to lightly drizzle it with oil, but you don't want to have like a ton of grease on it. Misto is really cool because you can put whatever oil you use. So some people use, you know, extra virgin olive oil or grapeseed oil or all these different oils that are
coconut oil.
Healthier for you. And it just, you know, you pump it with the air a little bit. It's like it has like the handle has like a little pumping action, and then you press it and it just continue. It's like a continuous fine spray of it's almost like the spray really reminds me of like a cooking spray. But a cooking spray has all kinds of stuff added to it that you wouldn't necessarily want to eat. But this is just like exactly like that. It's just like very, very fine droplets of your favorite oil, and you put it lightly on the vegetable, and it has just enough of that oil so that it doesn't burn on the grill so you have that different textures and you have the a little bit more oil on it. And it's great. It really makes cooking easier. And I think it allows you to control what you're eating. So this is like yet another way of being conscious of your diet and you cut out chemicals from your diet. So it's to use your own oil spray instead of a cooking spray that you can buy at a grocery store.
I love that. Excellent. I know, you know, people don't realize I was like at work the other day, we put like the little ranch dressing salad cups with people, and like our regular portion is a 2-ounce cup, and I was like, well, how many tablespoons is in a cup? And it's like giving people like 8 servings, so it was like 560 calories, 560 calories for the little cups, and when we give them a big cup, it's over 1,000 calories in ranch dressing. Like, do we realize what we're giving people here when we feed? Like, I kind of put a note on the board. And everybody's a little more conscious about like how much salad dressing are we really passing out now. Ranch, yeah, it's fattening, but like even the balsamic vinegar has like 110 calories per serving, and a serving is 2 tablespoons. And I don't know if they think because it's a 2-ounce cup, but 2 tablespoons is actually equal to a 1/2 ounce, and so that 110 calories, a 2-ounce is 4 of those. So it's like, oh my goodness, it's crazy. Anyway. Healthy eating. I love the Misto oil thing. I'll try to find a picture and a link. Maybe I can get a little affiliate from Amazon on there if somebody wants to do my thing. Yeah. Because anyway, so what's your favorite internet resource that you wanted to share? Is it the Facebook groups, or did you have somewhere else that you like to go on the internet, or?
Yeah, I mean, the Facebook group is literally, I started, so that is definitely my favorite internet resource. I mean, I would go at the beginning when I sort of research in winter, you know, you have those long winter evenings and you start planning out your garden. I like to go on Pinterest because it helps me because it's very visual. So, and Pinterest has a ton of articles and blogs and websites that you can find about growing vegetables and growing, I mean, just about anything, right? So I like to go on Pinterest in winter, and because it visually helps me sort of organize my ideas and it sort of pops out at you easier because it's all pictures. Currently, right now, my favorite is just a local gardening group on Facebook. And our group is pretty large. I think it has like over 1,000 members. So it's a wealth of information. And a lot of people live nearby. So if you have something to, like a perennial to share, or if you're looking for something, like some people are looking for mint and hostas and things that are, you know, everybody has a ton of it. It's easy to just say, hey, you know, if anybody wants any free hostas, I have, you know, a bunch that you can come and dig out. And that's another way to like now meet people, because I a few months ago, someone in my town posted on that Facebook group that, you know, she had a surgery and she wasn't able to trim her roses. So if anybody could, you know, would be interested in coming mm-hmm. to help her trim the roses. And I said, I'll come and trim, you know, I have roses. So like, I know how to trim them totally. And that way I can meet somebody, you know, that is in my town that I otherwise would never talk to. So she gave me a ton of advice and she gave me plans and things. So I think the local Facebook group is really, really, really great. So if you have, you know, even if you can't find a Facebook group for your local area, then start it. And it's crazy how many people have those same questions that, you know, it's almost like we're all in this together. You know, and then you just post a question and you get a response for your local targeted area, because everybody, all the different kinds of areas around the country, like everybody has different growing zones, you know, for the, you know, different, like we're in zone 6. So, you know, I couldn't really, it's hard for me to give advice or to ask questions for somebody that grows stuff in Florida, for example, because it's, you know, they're completely different, you know, the completely different environment. But it's important to have that local group that also gives you support, and then you can have social things, you can go and like go on garden tours, and I mean it's really cool. You get to meet a lot of really cool people and they're all really knowledgeable, and it's really awesome resource is to have a local Facebook group for gardening.
Absolutely. And you might be surprised how fast that grows. I recently started a hiking group in my town. It's got like 150 people already. And like, oh my God, started it like a month ago. And that's just in my little town.
Yeah.
So I would think a gardening group, if you don't have a gardening group in your town, I'd totally encourage you. Don't be shy. Go for it. And, you know, I'm definitely going to encourage you to join the Organic Gardener podcast Facebook group. Hopefully we'll have little people from everywhere eventually. So,
yes.
But it's growing a little, it's growing much more rapidly than I thought for just starting it in April. So
yeah,
we're getting there. Yeah, I do too. I love my listeners and my guests. You guys rock is why. So Basha, what's your favorite reading material? Like, is there a book or a magazine or a blog or a website or anything that you want to recommend?
So I really don't, I just go on the internet, frankly, and I don't have a favorite, magazine or website. Yeah, so the only resource that I basically go on all the time is the Facebook group or Pinterest. And Pinterest kind of has a little bit of everything. So I have groups that I follow, but I couldn't really pinpoint a specific one just because I don't go on them as much, so
I think that's good. I don't think anybody's recommended Pinterest. If they have, it's been a while. So I'm not a very big Pinterest person, but I might check into it more. Especially you've kind of inspired me to look at it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, are we going to... You kind of already answered the final question about the one change. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's maybe the only thing that I would like to add is the way I feel about GMO, just sort of to like summarize, is because I've taken so many genetic studies courses and at school, I feel like GMO inherently is not bad. And we've been like with farming practices, we've been sort of altering, you know, with cross-pollinating and things like that and breeding practices, we've been sort of altering the animals and plants that we grow. We've been doing that for years, and GMO is really, I feel the potential for it is really awesome, because you can make things like, you know, you can make rice more nutritious, for example, to help people in developing world to have better access to nutrition and things like that. But it's just, I feel like because it's such an expensive technology and it really is profit driven, I feel like we really should stay away from it, even though it has such a great potential to do so many great things. I mean, it's like sky's the limit, right? You could make things that grow better in colder temperatures to extend your season and so that they're resistant to pests, so then you don't have to use pesticide. I mean, I would be all for that. If you could grow plants that required less chemicals to upkeep them, like that would be amazing. But it seems to me that in the current system that we have, we just use GMO to like make plants Roundup ready, for example, like so that the genetically modified corn is resistant to Roundup. So then you can spray the entire field with Roundup and kill everything else, and the corn is going to survive. I think that's bad. So unfortunately, just like with any other invention, there is two ways you can go with it, and it has a potential to be really, really great. And it's almost like we should explore the avenues in which genetic altering would make life easier for us and better for the environment. But at the same time, it's such a dangerous, it's almost like a weapon, right? It's so dangerous that it really gets abused. So I wish that there was more more laws and regulations that regulate GMO. Maybe that would make it so that we would use it just sort of for the benefit of the community and not just for the benefit of the one company that makes the profit. So that would be one, that would be like the one thing that I would want to change, is to, and that falls on the umbrella of the safer food practice that I would like to see the change in the, I would like to see change that in on the global scale.
Wow, awesome. I like that. That's so interesting, because Mike was just showing me this video of Hillary Clinton talking about that, just like basically that same thing. And she was saying, you know, we're all trying to get to the place, you know, like if you explain things as being drought resistant, you know, that's something that we're all going to embrace. But if you say it's a GMO, genetically modified, she said that that sounds kind of like Frankensteinian type of vocabulary. Exactly. And she was like, a lot of it is talking about it in the right sense. Right. And it was actually like this very negative Hillary Clinton advertisement thing.
Oh.
I was like, well, I don't know. Drought resistant sounds good to me. You know, we do want crops, but I don't know that we want to. I think the big problem with GMOs is just the science isn't really in, but exactly. We definitely know we don't want food that is sprayed with Roundup, and right. That it's, you know, there's got to be, you know, if there's good uses for the science. I like the whole way you put that. So, that was great. Nobody said anything like that. And it's nice to have a scientist on here talking about somebody who's studying and very knowledgeable. So cool. Well, I always say Monsanto is going to come around because they have to, because there's too many of us here and they're just probably going to try
so.
To do. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I just always believe that inherently everybody really, you know, we're all humans. We're all sharing this planet. We all have family. We all have brothers. We all have sisters. We all have mothers. We all want, you know, a healthy planet where we can live. And I don't know. I always think there's good in everybody, and we just have to figure out how to get along. And even if we have disagreements, we're still just, you know, all sharing the same place. So,
right.
Anyway, Basha, full of just golden seeds galore today. Do you just have a little inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden, as if you haven't dropped a million of them?
So if you've ever been on Pinterest or any other internet websites, you get all these different funny little quotes. And one of those funny little quotes that I don't even remember because it's been reproduced so many times, I don't know the author of it, but the quote that says gardening is cheaper than therapy and you get tomatoes is sort of like the funny quote that you see, that I see all the time. And I really like that quote because I think it's so true. because gardening really makes me feel so much better about my whole day. You know, if I can find even 10 minutes to go out and even just be in the garden, even if you don't have time to pull weeds or tie things and trim things and apply fertilizer or apply compost or whatever, it's so nice to just be outside, and it's such a soothing environment. You get to observe the birds and the insects and the plants, and it's just, it really makes my day so much better if I get to be outside in the garden, even if it's just for a few minutes. Like before work, I'll go and water or turn the well on and just sort of walk around, and I say hello to my flowers and and my birds, and I'm sure, I hope I'm not the only one that talks to birds, but I like to say hello to my birds in the morning. So it really is just such a soothing, almost like a cathartic thing that you can do to help you sort of ground. It's like, you know, it's, some people practice yoga, or if some people, you know, have different ways to deal with stress. I like to garden because it helps me grounded, and sort of, you don't think about what you have to do that day. You're just sort of in the moment and you get to observe nature. And I think there really isn't anything better than that. So that is like my favorite quote regarding gardening, is that it's cheaper than therapy and you get tomatoes. So
I love it. Basha, thank you so much for sharing all your expertise and your knowledge and your passion and your caring for the environment with us today.
Thank you so much, Jackie. It's really an honor to be invited to speak on your show. And I really love to listen to your podcast. And I tell people to, you know, listen to it, because even if you're just driving and you're not, you know, I listen to it when I drive to work. So it's literally, I have an hour commute. So usually that 1 hour of your show is like the perfect time to just like even listen, you know, listen, and you might remember something that like that's a really cool tip, and you might want to try to do that in your own garden. So it's really an honor because you have so many amazing guests on your show. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, thank you. And I just have to say, it's an honor to be the host, to have such amazing guests. And I agree, because it's just great to hear all your guys' stories and to know that there's other people out there that think like we do and are helping to keep our world and make it a better, greener planet. So you have a wonderful day, and thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing with us today. And I don't know, just have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.